This is a Rabble Podcast Network show.
New voices in your head.
It's Radio
Free
Radio.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO at 100.5 FM.
The media stories of destruction, devastation, and recovery efforts from Hurricane Sandy have been constant and intense. Yet the media in North America have paid a lot less attention to the small Caribbean islands that also bore the brunt of the hurricane. Haiti in particular is still reeling from the aftermath of an earthquake in 2010 and from more recent tropical storms at the end of this summer. In Port-au-Prince, where 370,000 victims of the 2010 earthquake are living, Sandy destroyed concrete homes and tent camps alike. The storm brought massive crop damage through the southern third of the country, as well as the likelihood of a spike in cases of cholera and other waterborne diseases. While over 50 people died in the storm, the impoverished country may experience the deadliest effects of the storm's havoc in the days and weeks ahead. Brian Concannon is the director of the Institute for Justice and Democracy in Haiti, and he joins me this morning. Hello, Brian.
Hello, Jay. It's good to be with you.
What do we know about the damage of Hurricane Sandy, the damage that it wrought on Haiti?
Yeah, as you mentioned, it's fairly widespread. Obviously, the most immediate was the loss of life. The latest estimates I've heard was probably about 80 people have died, and it could be more or less than that. You also had a lot of people who were suffering misery when their houses or more frequently their tents were destroyed in the storm. But there's also, as you mentioned, some longer-term effects. It looks like that there's been a spike in cholera cases, which happens any time it rains. You don't need hurricane for that. And that will lead to more deaths. We don't know how many from that. And the food price rise, the destruction of crops is going to lead to probably more deaths and certainly more misery as the farmers no longer able to support their families, and as food prices rise, they've already risen in Haiti 50% for some staples just since the summer, and that will increase even more, which will cause more suffering and probably some death.
Tell me a little more about the destruction of agricultural crops. How much has been destroyed?
Well, the Haitian government is asking for $74 million to respond to the destruction in the agricultural sector. I've seen some estimates that are a bit higher than that, up to $150 million. It's hard to quantify because these are mostly small farms, and to do the research on exactly how much was damaged will take some time. But there were a lot of fields that were ready. Some had been planted and that just got washed away. There were a lot of animals that were killed. And there were some areas that are no longer suitable for agriculture because the topsoil was washed away.
And you mentioned the fact that the homes have been destroyed. Has that been a big factor in the hurricane, that so many people were homeless already from the earthquake?
Yes. Well, the I guess it's somewhat fortunate in that the worst of the hurricane was in the southern peninsula, which was not as hit as bad from the earthquake, but you do have a lot of people, officially 370,000 people in and around Port-au-Prince in tent cities. Unofficially, a lot more than that, somewhere between 500,000 and 700,000 people are living in something shy of a house. And a lot of those were destroyed. Obviously, there's not a lot of economic loss if you just lose a tarp, but for people who only have a tarp, losing that is pretty severe.
Well, that's a really interesting point, because so much of the discussion around Hurricane Sandy in New York has been the billions of dollars that's been lost. But I guess if you have so little, then you kind of, it racks up less on the dollars score.
Yes, I years ago when I was living in Haiti, I asked somebody, there weren't a lot of hurricanes coming in those days, and I asked why, and my friend joked. He said, oh, they don't come to Haiti because they can't rack up the damages because there's nothing to destroy. And that is obviously, you know, it's less of a stunning number when you see Haiti's losses, but when you don't have that much to lose, anything you lose is very severe. And if you look at food price rises, I mean, a 50% rise in North America would hurt a lot of people. But in Haiti, people are spending up to 70-80% of their family budget on food. And when that item goes up by a huge amount, that becomes lethal.
What is the situation with cholera? What was the situation before Hurricane Sandy hit?
So the cholera was still the world's worst cholera epidemic, and it's killed about 500 people this year and sickened maybe around 50,000, so less than it did the year before, but still killing at an alarming rate. And it tends to go up and down. So in the dry seasons, the deaths and the sickness would go down. During the earlier in the year, when there were some rainy seasons, it went up, and then it went up when Hurricane Isaac hit Haiti, and it did it again when Hurricane Sandy hit. So almost any time you have any kind of stress, any kind of precipitation stress on Haiti, the cholera cases are going to go up.
Now, I know that some people in North America are finally pointing the finger at the effect of climate change on the intensity of Hurricane Sandy, but Haiti has also had massive environmental damage historically. What is that history of environmental damage, and how did it affect what happened there during the hurricane?
Haiti is starkly deforested. It's a problem that was first raised by a monk, Moreau de Saint-Marie, back in the 18th century, and it accelerated during the U.S. occupation from 1914 to 1934, and is now at the point where Haiti has less than 5% of its land surface is covered by forest. And so what happens is when the rain lands on Haiti, it's a very mountainous country, it starts heading downhill very quickly and taking with it the soil, and when it gets into ravines, it fills the ravines and takes houses that are in those ravines. And when it finally gets to the low-lying areas, often which are often crowded, then it floods and it kills people there. And it's important to look at, to note that Sandy actually never hit Haiti as a hurricane and barely touched as a tropical storm. If you look at the map of the wind history of Sandy, it went straight over Jamaica as a hurricane, straight over Cuba as a hurricane, straight through the Bahamas as a hurricane, and hit the United States, New York, and New Jersey as a hurricane, and as a tropical storm for hundreds of miles on either side. But Haiti, tropical storm winds only nicked the tip of Haiti. The problem really with Haiti wasn't the wind, it was just the rain. There was about half a meter over the course of 4 days, which is a lot, but more rain fell on Cuba and Jamaica and the Bahamas and in the United States without causing anywhere near the catastrophic damage, and that's because in all those places there are more trees.
So we have a picture now of intense destruction and human need and misery. What has the Haitian government been able to do to help people living there?
From the reports I've heard, and I don't think anything's conclusive, but from reports I've heard, the Haitian government did a decent job with its limited resources of responding to the emergency. They did a good job of getting the word out. They got, I think, about 20,000 people into shelters, which probably wasn't enough, but was better than any governments had done before that. And so in that sense, they did a pretty good job. I think that they need to do a better job on some medium-term things, like making sure drainage ditches and drainage from roads work. But in the long term, what really needs to happen is the government needs to be empowered to provide basic government services that all successful countries have, and that includes Jamaica and Cuba and the Bahamas and the United States, that limited the damage. And probably the area that's most important is investment in rural economy, especially in agriculture. Agriculture in Haiti is 50% of the employment, close to 40% of GDP, but it only gets 6.5% of the government budget. And as a result, farmers, because they don't have enough support for their sector, they end up chopping down trees because they're desperately poor or leaving land unimproved that makes it more vulnerable to erosion. And so what you really need to do is to have an agricultural policy that supports farmers and keeps people on the land and keeps the land productive and covered with trees and crops that will buffer the storms.
So you say that the Haitian government needs to be empowered. And what is it that is preventing the Haitian government from that?
Well, there's certainly our Haitian governments historically have not done a great job with the resources they had. Some have done better than others. But overall, the problem in large part lies actually in North America and Europe, where it's been open policies of the international community to push the Haitian government to disinvest in the countryside. And that's been done through refusing to support government expenditures in agriculture. It's been done through trade policy, where we've pushed Haiti to drop its tariffs so that it can no longer compete with subsidized North American food products, and that just puts Haitians out of business. And it's actually also done through aid policy, things that look like they're doing some good. They actually put farmers out of business. And so the United States, for instance, gives a lot of food aid to Haiti, and often that's done in ways that undermines agriculture, because food is dumped on the market very cheap, so the Haitian, right at the time the Haitian farmers need to sell their harvest, they can't sell their harvest, so they go out of business and move to the cities where they're living in a vulnerable area, and then that land is no longer productive and no longer effectively buffering. And so we really need to, and even post-earthquake things where there was a lot of food distributed, but a lot of that was brought from outside the country when there was food available in the country to purchase. And so really the international community needs to say that it's going to support the Haitian government's ability to support its own farmers, just as the Canadian government and the United States government do.
So when people ask you, what can we do from Canada or from the United States to support Haiti in this kind of crisis, what would be the short-term and then the long-term answer you would give them?
Well, I think the important thing is to stay informed. And I think that you're doing a service by covering this. And I think that there's lots of organizations in Canada and the United States that cover some of these issues. In Canada, the Canada-Haiti Action Network is particularly effective, and they put out action alerts and they ask people to call their representatives, and there's several groups in the United States that do the same thing. My organization, Institute for Justice and Democracy in Haiti, our website's ijdh.org, we put out action alerts in ways that citizens of North America can let their elected representatives know what they think should be done to have a better day for Haiti. And I think just generally staying involved, understanding what our countries do in Haiti, I think that can often be complicated, but there are many good websites that provide good information on what's going on in Haiti. And again, I would say the Canada-Haiti Action Network website is a good example. You know, from time to time, in the United States, there was a lot of, for instance, when our Farm Bill came up, there was a lot of advocacy in terms of how the Farm Bill affected foreign aid. I don't know how that is happening in Canada, but certainly I expect that there are people who are working on issues of government subsidies for Canadian agriculture and how that impacts farmers elsewhere.
Well, thank you very much for talking to me this morning, Brian, and I will repeat the information about the website so people can go there and find out more information. Thank you.
Okay, it's been a pleasure to be with you, Jane.
I've been speaking with Brian Concannon. He's director of the Institute for Justice and Democracy in Haiti, and we spoke with him from Boston. If you'd like to find out more about the Institute for Justice and Democracy in Haiti, their website is ijdh.org, and the website that he mentioned here in Canada is canadahaitiaction.ca.